You've probably heard me say that the best stepmom support doesn't just focus on stepmom life. I've found that the best stepmom support goes deeper than simply understanding the complexities of the stepmom role. It's more than learning ways to co-parent and manage the ex and foster a relationship with your stepkids and find your place within it all. That's why now I'm offering 360-degree stepmom life coaching and mentorship. This is a 3-month mentorship tailored to your unique life and your unique goals. This is next-level coaching and support for those who are ready to dive in and create major change in their life. This mentorship includes goals and aspirations outside of your stepfamily, including your self-care practices, your rhythms, personal growth, and confidence. It's for stepmoms who are really ready to take control of their life. It's for the stepmoms who want to redefine their stepmom experience and look at their stepmom triggers and experience in an entirely different way. Who are you outside of motherhood and stepmotherhood? Who do you want to be? What does your best self look like? And what is preventing you from showing up as that person right now? That is what this mentorship is all about. If you want to work with me one-on-one for 3 months and to dive into all of this and completely transform your stepmom experience, head to www.jamiescrimshaw.com/coaching to learn more. This is an investment. This is a commitment. There's limited spots available. In addition to bi-weekly calls, we connect through voice and email support whenever you need it. It's you and me for 3 months. For all the info, head to www.jamiescrimshaw.com/coaching. Hey, it's Jamie Scrimger. When I became a stepmom, I quickly realized that while moms are encouraged to keep it real, there's a big double standard when it comes to stepmoms. So I decided to start the conversation myself. Thriving as a stepmom doesn't just come from conversations about being a stepmom, though. Here, we dive into marriage, relationships, personal growth, and more. My mission? Inspire you to live a kick-ass life while bringing you along as I create my own. This is the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. Hello, hello. Welcome to the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast. On today's episode, I have the ladies of the How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast on the show. Morgan is a divorce lawyer and Andrea is a comedian and she's also divorced. And together they, well, have real talk about the divorce process, the importance of having a good lawyer, and, well, what you need to do to thrive in this complicated situation. Highly recommend checking out their podcast. And on this episode, we dive into all things legal and co-parenting. So why you need a good lawyer, why you should interview at least 3 lawyers before hiring one, what holds people back from thriving in the divorce process, what is a stepmom's role in court and in the court process, and the truth about child support, and more. It's a good one. Let's dive in. All right, ladies, welcome to the Kick-Ass Stepmom Podcast, How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Thank you.
Can't wait to dive into this. I would love to hear how you guys started. Well, obviously, you probably do this out of personal experience and seeing the need, but I would love to hear how this all started.
Well, we are online internet daters at first.
Oh, I used to love online dating.
Yeah, so good. So weirdly, as a lawyer, I never saw a few years ago anyone posting about their personal experience in divorce. And for some reason, on Instagram, I kept seeing Andrea's face and kept popping up over and over again. And she was just out there talking about divorce. And I was thinking to myself, okay, she may be crazy, number one, because I've never seen this before. But two, I love it because I think we could help people because my clients don't come on. I can't have them on talking about their own divorces. And so I actually sent her a message and said, hi, you know, my name's Morgan. I'm a lawyer, and this is what I do for a living. I love what you're selling and talking about. And I think we could maybe work together and do something to help others. And so that was our first internet date.
Wow. Oh, okay. So no, you guys internet dated. I thought you meant like you were both online dating, single online dating.
No, that was just me. I was online dating.
Oh my God.
But did not online date Morgan in that way. Not yet, at least.
So good. Yeah, love it. Okay. So then you guys just started creating content together, started the podcast, and it just kind of rolled from there.
Yeah, it did. It snowballed. I feel like we started talking about what we were going to do, what we were going to call it. And, you know, I loved Andrea's messaging because she is a comedian by background. And I think she brought a lot of difference to our podcast because it's such a heavy topic. Nobody wants to hear like, oh man, life sucks and it's going to get worse for you. And so Andrea really brings a little bit, or I should say a lot of bit of humor to our podcast and lightens up a really tough topic.
And are you both divorced?
No, I'm not. I'm happily married.
You're happily married. And Andrea, you're divorced.
I am.
Mm-hmm. And you're the divorce attorney.
Yes.
So you see it all.
Yep. So we're pretty unique because we have a divorce attorney's view talking about the law and the legalities and what you can and can't do and what you should and should not do. And then we have somebody who actually went through a divorce, who made all of the mistakes and who can kind of talk from experience to make it better for our listeners, but also throw in some humor. So you're not jumping out of the window listening to our podcast.
Mm-hmm. I love it. Sometimes my sisters will say to me, or like people in my life will be like, how can you laugh at that? Like, it sounds terrible. Like, why are you laughing? I was like, because you have to. Like, sometimes if you do not like make a joke about something, it can just get really heavy. So I love the idea of bringing in the humor. And I'd love to hear, what kind of mistakes are you talking about? Like the mistakes that you make when you get divorced? Like, how do you not suck at it?
I think that the biggest mistake that you can make is operating from a purely emotional place, which is where how everybody enters a divorce. A divorce it's a business agreement. It's not emotional, but you are very emotional when you're going through it. So the hardest part is removing yourself, removing the pain, removing the fear, removing everything in your head that's going to help you make a really bad decision. And then that kind of leads into what I think is the most important part of the whole process, which is who's representing you. All roads lead back to who do you hire to be your divorce attorney? So we focus a lot on our show with helping people find the representation that's right for their case and for their personality.
And how do you do that?
There's a process. We actually have a whole formula that we talk about, and we have a crash course that we actually have available for people because we found the number one question we get over and over and over again is, can you help me? Do you know this person? What do I do? What do I ask? So one of the things that we tell people over and over again is you cannot hire the first attorney you speak to. You have to interview 3 attorneys, and then we have a list of questions that you should be asking them.
And we also, it doesn't matter where you're located, you know, with my background being in a big city, I'm out of Chicago, I have the ability to locate competent divorce counsel anywhere. And you would be shocked at the amount of people coming through our community. We have a private community on Facebook that are saying, I'm in this area and I need good representation. And we will go out of our way to get referrals and recommendations of people that have the credentials to be a potentially good fit.
Mm-hmm. So when you're asking questions, I know you have your resource. Give me a couple things that you really want to make sure is aligned when you have that lawyering. Because sometimes you need a lawyer after you've been divorced and you're like going back and reevaluating the agreement, or something's not going well, or needs to be a change in custody. So, you know, this really applies, I think, to also, you know, stepmoms and their partners and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's interesting because I see when people are remarried and there's stepmom or stepfather involved and they do go back, a lot of times that person, unfortunately, is kind of drawn into the process. They may go to the meetings, they may help the spouse. So a few questions that we talk about all the time when you go in to meet with a lawyer. First of all, bring a pen and paper, jot some notes down, bring some questions in beforehand. But the thing that you want to know is, how do you communicate with them? What's the best method? Is it an email? Is it a phone call? Sometimes lawyers will say, I want bullet points on an email. I think the other thing to say is, after you talk about what's been going on and show them your paperwork, you want a clear strategy. And so you want to say, what is your strategy and how are we going to execute it? And then the last thing I would say, ask before you leave, is there anything that I didn't ask that you want me to know, or maybe that I should have asked? And let that lawyer kind of go forward and talk about things that maybe you missed.
Mm-hmm. You know what I think is really good that you just said there is the strategy piece. Because I know, you know, we were dealing with lawyers, I'm going to say it's a few years ago now, and going back and reevaluating the agreement and child support and all the things. And it was very, wasn't a black and white situation. It's a very complicated situation. And, you know, it just got to the point where I felt like the lawyers were sending letters and letters and letters, and it was just going back and forth. And what is the plan here, right? Because no one's coming to an agreement through these letters that are slinging mud. And I do think now looking back after you said that, if we would have said like, what is the strategy here? What are the steps? Because I also think a lot of people will say, well, we're going to go to court. I don't know, depending on the area. I'm just outside of Toronto in Canada here, but like you don't just go to court. Like there's mediation, there's case conferences, there's negotiations back and forth. And so I think there's always this big threat that you're going to go to court and it's like, you might not even ever see a judge.
Well, that's the funny thing. When people, we always talk about that on our show. And the reason I think our show has been so wildly successful, actually shockingly, I don't think Andrea and I ever expected the amount of success that has come out of it. But the reason I think that it is we give action steps in every episode, very simple ones, just to help you on whatever topic we're talking about, get through it. Now, if you're like me and you want it all, you know, I'm kind of a check the box kind of person. So it's like, put all the information in one space because I just want it, like vomit of the action steps. That's kind of why we put together our class. And so you can get all of those right away rather than listening to every episode. But I agree with you, Jamie, that especially if you're a step parent, you need to have a clear strategy with your spouse and the attorney that you have on board. Because it's a whole different realm when you're a step parent, because it's easy for you to say to your spouse, like, what are we doing here? This all seems ridiculous. Like, why are we spending this money? And if there's not buy-in on the spouse or the step parent's part, it's only going to cause friction and tension at your house, which you should be a united front. And you don't want any more friction or tension. You have enough with your lawyers that you're hiring to try to work out whatever issue is at issue.
Mm-hmm, for sure. What kind of role do you see step-parents playing in the court process? Because, you know, I've interviewed several different lawyers for the podcast and inside the membership as well. And there's different perspectives on the role that this new partner should play in the process. So what are your thoughts? And do you feel like in the higher conflict situations, does the new partner end up just kind of like adding some gasoline to the fire?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. I think it's case by case, of course, but I will say that I feel for the step parents. I think a lot of them come into an unknowingly difficult situation. There's a lot of blending that takes place in a step parent's life. You think that it may be all, you know, rosy, and then you kind of get into it and it's tougher. It's a tougher road than you expected. And I would always suggest as the step parent to step back in those court cases for a few reasons. Number one, like you said, the more present they are, the more gasoline may be thrown on the fire, which then may lead to them being dragged into the case more. The last thing you need is a step parent being dragged in for a deposition or getting a subpoena asking for financial records or text messages. As a step parent, your main role in that situation would to be there for your spouse and be that strong rock for your spouse, as long as it's not taking you down too, but not get so entwined with the process that you are also now a party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. That, oh, I can't imagine what that would be like. I would say with us, my role, Darren is, he's not the most proactive when it comes to stressful situations. We actually had this conversation on the weekend. So when things are stressful and there's a lot of things going on, he's the person who's like going to focus on one thing and then the next thing and avoid the most stressful thing, whether it be court case or like putting a shelf on the wall, you know, like that kind of thing. And for me, I'm like, oh, we've got stress. Okay, like let's tackle it. Let's get proactive. How are we going to do it? This is what we need to do. So it was so challenging for me when we were going through all of this because I was like, what's the plan? What are we going to do? Okay, here's the response. Okay, I had documented this. Here you go. And on one side, I feel like I was more stressed out about their legal battles than anyone else was. But then on the flip side, I don't know if he would have ever got it all like organized in the way that it really needed to be to get the outcome that he had. So I think that's where a lot of the stepmoms struggle, but I never went to court. I would never went to the court cases. I was like the admin behind the scenes kind of thing.
Well, it's funny you say that because we, at least I do, I love the admin behind the scenes. So as long as it doesn't hurt our confidentiality, a lot of women, and I hate to stereotype because I have a lot of male clients too, but a lot of women are better at big picture. Like, okay, big picture, here's what we have to tackle. Here's what we have to tackle first. Here's why we're doing it strategy. The men can get it done when they need to, but they're not always looking at big picture. So a lot of times when I have a step parent in the mix, I'm loving that because I'm like, okay, can I speak with both of you? I'm going to put sometimes both of you, depending on confidentiality, on an email. Here's what we need to do. Here's why. And then we've got, you know, the woman off and running. The man may dig his head in a little bit, but maybe she's running the show. She's the project manager on the case.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Project manager. I was the project manager.
Project manager of life.
Now, Andrea, I want to come back to the piece you mentioned about emotion. So taking the emotion out of it. And it is so true, but it's such an emotional situation. And then you have like the business aspect of it, right? What are your tips and strategies for helping, you know, women and men or anyone who's in co-parenting conflict from taking that emotion out of the equation so that they really can kind of come to that agreement?
Well, I think you have to start with the fact that it's almost an impossible task. So you do have to take a minute to recognize the fact that you are being asked to do the impossible. And I will say that sometimes the hardest conflicts are the ones that happen post-decree. So a lot of times people go through the divorce process, you agree to a bunch of things because you want the divorce process to be over with, and then you quote-unquote move on with your life. You're in a new relationship, your kids get a little older, and then all of a sudden, these issues that in the back of your head thought might come up years later, but you were also like, fingers crossed, this doesn't become an issue. Now all of a sudden, boom, it's an issue. What do I do? And I think that the way that you take the emotion out of it is you get the right help. I'm a big proponent of having a team. And I talk about this all the time on our podcast, and I talk about it on my personal platform. I'm a big believer in having therapists that do their job. I'm a big believer in having a really good attorney who does their job. And then you also have to know, how do I put my friends to work in the right way? I'm really big, and Morgan is the same way. Your friend cannot be your attorney, meaning your friend should not be giving you legal advice, and your friend should not be your therapist. So you kind of have to have everybody in these buckets, and together you have a team and a community of support, because you're going to fall apart. And you have to have that space to know, I can be really strong and send this very well-worded email at 9:45 a.m. on a Monday, and by 10:53 a.m. on Monday, I might be crying in my bathroom. And that's okay. The two of those can coexist.
Mm-hmm. Do you think people talk enough about the grief process that comes with divorce? Because I just think we don't talk about grief enough in general, but there's so much grief that comes up at the end of a marriage for kids, for, you know, partners. How do you think that finds its way into the conflict?
Look, I don't think it's just the grief. I don't think we talk enough about how we got to this place. I mean, I went through this and I talk about this a lot, but the fact that I knew from the very beginning that my marriage was not a good choice, but I walked down that aisle anyway. So I don't think we talk enough about the role, the responsibility that we all play in how we got here, and then the subsequent grief or all of the stuff. I think that we keep so much to ourselves because we're afraid of what that means, right? It's uncomfortable to take responsibility. It's a very unpopular opinion to say, oh yeah, that marriage that I had a few years ago, whoops, my bad. I totally shouldn't have done that, right? Because everyone's like, but the kids, but then you wouldn't have this. And what about the good memories? For a lot of people, you still made a mistake. And that's just the way it is. Or for a lot of other people, when things went sideways, you pushed all of that pain away, right? We talked to a lot of people in our private community who had a really happy marriage until all of a sudden things went sideways. They pushed it away, hoping that that wasn't their reality. And then again, boom, everything blew up. And now they're dealing with the pieces. It's really hard to take on grief in a vacuum. It's got to come in like these bits and pieces so that you can really kind of put together how we got to this place and where do we go from here.
Yeah, I love that. I think it's really interesting. I knew that this was not the right choice from the beginning. And you hear that from so many people, right? They're like, I should have never married them or all the things. And I've been thinking a lot about my daughter and my stepdaughter. So my stepdaughter's now, she's 21. And I'm so jealous that they're in this time, right? That they get to be like women in this time for, I feel like there's not that pressure to get married, not that pressure to do what the next step is. And I've been talking a lot about how I just thought like you get married, then you had to have kids. And, you know, you have a lot of young women now who are challenging that narrative of like, what's next? They're like, nah, actually, I'm not really into that. That does not look like that much fun. I'm going to go maybe travel or, you know, start a business. But, you know, how much of that do you think, you know, the responsibility, Andrea, but also just the times, right? Just thinking like, I want to get married. I need to get married. It's what's next. My friends are getting married. You know, my friends are having kids. A divorce would be shameful. A divorce would be embarrassing. Like, I just have to like tough it out for the kids. Like, just that narrative is, it doesn't do anyone any service.
Yeah. I think the more work that we can do with this next generation of people seeing also, you have to really know who you are and what you want and what your worth is before you enter into a marriage, because it is a big deal. You know, I know for me, it had a lot to do with stuff that I hadn't healed from. I thought that I had done the work. I thought that I had healed from things in my childhood, but whoops, you know. And I think for a lot of people, we see that. I think Morgan has conversations with men and women all the time who kind of break down once they get in front of her saying like, oh my God, how the hell did I get here? This is not what I thought my life would look like. And now everything has fallen apart. And I think that, you know, you have to look at, you know, a divorce, what it does to you. It changes what you thought your life would look like. It's a big breakup culturally because you're not going to live in the same house that you were living in. You're not going to see your kids every single day. That's a tough thing. And the amount of money that you are spending for all of this to happen.
Yeah.
It's like you're going to someone and saying, here, take all of my savings and go blow up my life. Have fun. It's tough. That's why you need a really good guide to help you navigate your way through this. And like we said before, it doesn't always end when you get divorced. There's a likelihood, especially in the higher conflict situations, where you're going to be going back, maybe not into court, but having conversations with attorneys to flesh stuff out for the kids. And I think it's just having that mindset of, I'm going to do this. I'm going to be okay. I might not be okay in this very moment, but I'm going to be okay. And then that tied to, like I said before, like utilizing your friends in the right way, but also utilizing your now current spouse in the right way if you are remarried. And I can say that from a place of, I'm about to get remarried. So I'm in that place of kind of figuring out like the role that we all play.
Mm-hmm. And I think those are conversations you need to be having beforehand, right? Especially in the second marriages, right? Like, what role are we all going to play in the dynamic and being super clear on like, hey, this gets a little bit messy. You know, here's the holiday schedule. Here's how this works. Like, here's the document that I'm literally legally bound to live by until my kids are 18. Again, where a lot of stepmoms come into a lot of frustration, right? Because they're like, I have to live my life based on this co-parenting agreement that is terrible and that I had no part in creating. Like, it's dictating my Christmas. It's dictating all the things. So yeah.
Yeah. Organizing holidays with all of people's co-parenting schedules is so stressful. I mean, this last Thanksgiving, it's like, hope my like fiance's son's schedule and then my kids. And it's like, can we find a day to do Thanksgiving? You know, because it is so hard, but really everybody has to get on the same page and you have to have a conversation with everyone and say, we're not striving for perfection here. Like, not every year is going to be the way that you want it to look, but how do we get through this?
I want to tell you something. There was a time in my life when I would never spend money on pajamas. I don't even think I really had pajamas. I wanted to invest my funds into things that I would wear outside of the house. When I had to buy my first sheet set, I did not understand why someone would invest in anything but the least expensive sheets possible. That was me in my early 20s. Now that I'm in my late 30s, I realize just how wrong that was. Investing in bedding and loungewear and pajamas makes all the sense in the world. My go-to, as you know, is Cozy Earth. From their PJs to their loungewear to their temperature-regulating sheets made from bamboo viscose, Cozy Earth has helped me level up my quality of sleep and how I feel when I'm in lounge mode. The first thing that I do when I get home is either switch into a cozy bamboo jogger set or right into my PJs. Sleeping in my duvet cover and sheet set made from the premium viscose bamboo is like a freaking dream. Temperature regulating sheets are definitely the move. It is no surprise that Cozy Earth has made Oprah's favorite things several years in a row. Their products are next level, and these are the softest clothes that I own. Right now, I'm actually in the process of going through all of my clothes and purging things that don't make me feel or look right. And most of my loungewear is out. I'm all about the Cozy Earth. The best part of the loungewear is that it just doesn't look sloppy. You can totally go out of the house and look completely put together. I even wore a set recording podcasts last week. Now, Cozy Earth has given listeners of the podcast 40% off any purchase with the code COZYJAMIE40. That's CozyEarth.com and use the code COZYJAMIE40 for 40% off. www.CozyEarth.com and use the code COZYJAMIE40 for 40% off. I'm a big believer in the whole look good, feel good mentality. And I know that when I am feeling at my best, when I am taking care of myself, when I am taking care of my body and nourishing myself, all the things, I am so much more equipped to deal with the extra stress that comes with, you know, our stepfamily dynamic. Now, if you listen to episode I did with Jen Vasey, I think it was episode 214, since September 2023, I have been doing the Metabolic Balance Program, and it has been basically a game changer for me and my body and for how I feel in general. I think this is the best money that I've ever spent on myself. I got into my mid-30s and all of a sudden I was gaining weight, I was feeling fluffy, I was tired, and no matter what I did with my diet or exercise, it was like nothing was budging. I didn't know what else to do. So I decided to try the Metabolic Balance Program and just commit to working with Jen. And so here is the lowdown on the Metabolic Balance Program. So it is a science-backed, all-natural nutrition program that pairs the chemistry of your blood values with the chemistry of food and uses food to heal. So by knowing the exact foods that are right for you to orchestrate change in the body, you will achieve less inflammation, stabilize your blood sugars, have consistent energy, have a healthy digestive system, hormonal balance, and just optimal body weight. So basically, with this program, you go and get your blood tested, they take your results, and they create a custom nutrition plan for you. So my girlfriend's food list was completely different than mine. In fact, her food list, I felt like it was a lot better. I was a little upset about that, but it was so crazy. Anyway, it has been such a success for me and so many other women who I have connected with, and I highly recommend checking her out. So if you are feeling like the scale won't budge, if you're not feeling confident, your hormones are off, all of the things, it's truly such a game changer. So if you're interested in starting on that wellness journey with Jen, you can contact Jen Vasey and find her on Instagram at jen.the.rhn. So Jen Vasey on Instagram, jen.the.rhn. Again, this was the best money I have ever spent on myself, and I feel like I am telling any woman who will listen about this program. And when you're talking to Jen, let her know that I sent you, or you can use the code KICKASSSTEPMOM and you can save $100 off the investment, which is huge. Now, Morgan, when you guys are doing the divorce and all of that, I'm sure you're creating the co-parenting plans as well, like getting kind of really granular on that. Where do you see people make mistakes when it comes to co-parenting plans and things that they don't include in their agreement. And then like how Andrew is saying, like, you know, this is going to be an issue down the road. And then they're like,
You know, I think the biggest thing and the thing that I keep seeing over and over and I keep telling clients don't do it is either rushing through it because they just want it done because they don't want to pay the money and they don't want the heartache and they just want it done. They don't want the fight. Or sweeping things under the rug that need to come out now. So like Andrea said, if you disregard major things, it will pop up later. And what do I think about those? Like, what are those things? Well, if someone's, you know, abusive or erratic or has a substance abuse problem or hasn't been the best parent whatsoever, and now you're like, well, don't even bring that up. Let's hurry through this and get this agreement done. Well, guess what? Those things don't go away. They only get worse. And so you will have to end up spending the money at some point. Do you want to prolong your suffering or just get it done right now? And those are the things that I really see being an issue. The other thing related to step parents, which I think is a big topic today that I see that I don't want to make any mistakes on, is I want my clients to really foresee that life will look differently in the future. Your now is not your forever. You likely will be dating someone or move on and have another marriage and maybe are bringing in a step parent of some sort. So a lot of people are really nearsighted. So you brought up Christmas. They may say, oh, we'll just add it in there. We'll do joint Christmas every year. And I say, hold on a second. You may want to take a step back because at some point you might have your own new family. And I don't know if your new husband or your new wife wants to do Christmas every year with your ex. So those are things that it's easy to look at the moment, but it's hard to look at long term. And that's where you want to rely on your divorce attorney.
Mm-hmm, for sure. I think there's a lot of attorneys who maybe aren't as detailed as they should be as well, right? I have so many stepmoms in the community because I talk about the importance of a co-parenting plan. And even coming up with a plan for if the plan isn't followed. I think that's really important. So, you know, it's really nice to have this document that outlines how expenses are going to be shared and how we're going to do extracurriculars and how we're going to do holidays and pick up and drop off and who's going to do what, like all the things. But then what? Like, what if you are dealing with someone who's high conflict and like, what are you going to do? Wave the paper in their face? Like, they don't care. Right. And so what are you going to do then?
Yeah.
What's next? Like, you're not going to call a lawyer every single time they won't pay their $25 for the pizza lunches. You know, where do you draw the line? How do you navigate that? Like, what's the best course of action in your opinion for someone who has a co-parenting plan that's just like not being followed?
Yep. So the first thing I would do is if it's little things, like you're not paying the pizza lunch over and over, of course, email the other side. Evidence is key for what we do. And say, you know, you didn't pay for it. Could you please pay for it pursuant to the terms of our agreement? What I also would say is if these little things keep happening, obviously keep a timeline, write it all down. That may be the time that you want to consult with a divorce attorney. Because if somebody's coming to me saying, I know this is stupid, but like five times they didn't pay for pizza lunch, and then they're refusing to pay for their half of soccer. And basically they told me to screw off. It's not a lot, but like, where do we go from here? What I'm doing as a lawyer is I'm saying, okay, let's think about this. You're not ripe right now to move forward, but here's what I want you to do to build up your case, to put the evidence in place so that when it becomes a little bit more substantial, we're ready to go to court and hammer these people and change what needs to be changed.
Yeah, I love that. Because, you know, a lawyer is not cheap. You know, it all adds up. And sometimes I would say to my husband, like, my dad was growing up, so my parents were divorced. My dad is like the king of no bullshit, period.
I love it.
Not into compromise. He's like shutting stuff down. So when my parents got divorced, like my poor mom, the amount of freaking lawyer's letters that he would have sent her just over like anything he heard was just shutting it down, which I thought was really great in a lot of respects that like it was just very clear right off the get-go. But I'm like, how much did you spend on lawyer's letters to, you know, deal with issues that maybe were not going to cost you that much in the long run, right? Like picking your battles and figuring it out. And I think when you're dealing with a high conflict person, and I've been talking a lot about this lately, is you got to get over being right and winning. Sometimes it's about protecting your peace too.
Agreed. And it's also protecting or getting to what you want the way that the other person needs. So you might have to do some, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, messing with their mind to get to what you want. You may have to play their game, and Andrea would have said it, you know, just outright, but you have to play their game to get to what you want. And there's a way to do it, and there's a way to not do it. You know what's going to push their buttons, but if they want to feel right in order to give you what you want, then make them feel like that. Put your tail between your legs, say, you're so right, you are the best, but can I still have that weekend that I really need because you're so amazing? And they may say yes. So you have to kind of just do it that way and play the game sometimes to get what you need.
Mm-hmm. Or give them something that they really want in lieu of.
Agreed.
Right? Like there's got to be some sort of negotiation. I think that's where a lot of people get caught up in the long drawn out court battles because they're all stuck on like ticking all of their boxes and getting all of the things that they want. And it's not going to happen, or it's going to be very expensive.
And just like, I feel like as people are listening to this conversation, like eyes are probably rolling and people are ready to pull out their hair extensions. And like, yeah, this shit is stressful. It is. And it's exhausting. It just is. It's exhausting figuring out, do I play the game? Do I not play the game? What game are we playing? What am I giving you? How much am I giving you? Do I care? Do I not care? Is it an attorney? Is it a friend? You know, like it wears you out. And that's just part of this. And I think that's why it's so important to have like the group that you run, Jamie, and our group, because you need these places to go. To help get like the guidance and the camaraderie to know that you are not alone as you navigate it. Because it's easy for us to sit here right now and like, I'm going through stuff right now. So it's actually, it's not easy for me. It's easy for you too.
No.
You got it too?
Shit show.
Okay. So, I mean, I literally feel like there's like bugs crawling on my skin right now while I like pretend to say to people, you know, you can pick your battles. Sometimes that's really hard. And that is why having, again, like we always say this, all roads go back to having that right attorney, because you could even go to that attorney and say, is this a battle I pick right now? And likely they're going to say, what, Morgan? Document, and then we'll decide.
Yep. A good lawyer isn't going to take your money over the Miss Pizza. A good lawyer is going to set out a strategy for you on that. And also, Jamie, you keep talking about this, these letters back and forth. Let me just put on the record, those are called letter writing campaigns. I never do them. I think they're a colossal waste of time and money, and they make me crazy. Just get your lawyer to sit down with the other side and see what you can hammer out.
I know, Andrew, you're talking about, you know, having your support and having therapy and, you know, a lawyer, and your lawyer is not your therapist. It's a lawyer is more expensive than a therapist. Like it's, people get very, they, you know, do the long-winded meetings with their lawyers and then they get their bills later and they're like, oh my gosh, right? Because you're paying them for legal advice, not for therapy. And so I think that's a big thing. But do you have any strategies for dealing with the stress of the legal battle? Like how do you take care of yourself during that time? Especially if you're in a relationship as well too, right? Because, you know, I know at the very beginning when Darren was getting lawyer's letters and I couldn't think about anything else, and he's a man, men can compartmentalize things, right? Like he's put it in like that, and I'm, you know, a bowl of spaghetti, my brain, like always thinking about it. It was very consuming and it impacts your life. It rocks you. So how can you try to take care of yourself during all of that, or just accept it's just a really hard time?
Well, both. I think so. There's a few things. Number one, something that Morgan and I agree on, not that we disagree on stuff, but this is something that we both do. And then I'll get to something that I did separately. We are huge proponents on walking. As silly as it sounds, Morgan is actually known to even take a break if she's in mediation with a client and say, okay, like I'm calling it, everybody out of the pool. You are too overwhelmed right now to make a decision. Get up. We're going for a walk.
All together?
Yeah.
All together?
I'll take clients for a walk. Oh, not, yeah. Not with the other side generally.
Yeah. No, someone would get pushed into traffic. That would be the end of everything.
Yeah.
No, but she'll walk with her client just to help them take a breath, reframe. And I always tell people, and I do it myself, I'll text my fiance during the day and I'm like, hip, getting up to take a mental health walk. because right now I can feel like I've pushed my body to the extent of what I can do, whether it's work stress, the divorce stress, whatever it is, taking a break and moving your body. We always joke that we're not runners unless we're being chased, but we're walkers.
What do we call it? Whining and walking.
Whining and walking.
You have two options. You can literally either call someone and whine or just talk to yourself like a crazy person, or you could literally bring wine on your walk and walk. We don't care. Just get out and whine and walk.
Move that body.
Love it.
Move that body. The other thing that I did, because I met my now fiance right when I separated. So we were together throughout my entire divorce process. And something that I learned really early on is that I could not go to him with everything that I was experiencing, because that's what I was doing in the beginning, right? And it would be, at the time, my parenting schedule looked like it was every Thursday, I think at 5:45, my kids were picked up. So I used to like have my little overnight bag packed, and 5:45 came, the kids were gone. I'm like, oh, I miss my kids. And I'd be in the car driving to his house, and I'd get there. I'm like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And then I realized, like, oh my God, I am dumping this shit on this guy every single week. So I had to give myself breaks and set up something that I did on my own for myself. And I created a buffer. So I would say, like, okay, I am no longer going to go straight from my kids getting picked up by their dad to going to his house. Like, I had to go and do something for like an hour to an hour and a half to give myself that time to decompress. And for me, nothing makes me happier than like discount shopping. Like, I'm a real big into fashion, but not real big into paying full price. So I would literally go and wander through like a TJ Maxx or a Marshall's for like an hour.
I love it.
Every single week, you could find me there. And that was what I did.
Well, it's funny. I want to say one thing related to, you know, step parents or new relationships. What we see as divorce lawyers is a lot of times is the relationship that happens during the divorce. A lot of people struggle post-divorce to keep that relationship together if they're doing what Andrea was just talking about, dumping everything on the other side or vice versa. Because what we see with those new relationships is they are very, very strong when there's turmoil, because it's like me and you against the world. We're going to do this. And then when the divorce is done and things calm down, they're like looking at each other like, what? Now what? Who are you? You know, we have nothing else to talk about. And I see a lot of breakups about that. So you have to be really careful about really bringing them in all the time.
Well, because you're connecting over the drama, right?
Yes.
And it is crazy that you said that, because so when Darren and I first got together, obviously, so just to kind of give you the rundown, we have a 13-year age difference. He got together with me like very quickly after they split. So I was like the new young girlfriend. It ended up causing a lot of conflict, obviously. Did not blame her one bit, like the whole thing, right? Just like looked like your stereotypical rebound relationship. He even had like a Corvette at the time. It was a thing.
Oh, yes.
It had to go.
I hope it was red.
I hated that car. No, it was orange. Terrible.
Oh.
Terrible.
Oh.
Anyway, so we would talk a lot about the conflict, talk a lot about the kids. You know, I was very insecure back then when I look back. I was very judgmental, right? And I think that's where a lot of stepmoms will be very judgmental of the ex, how they're parenting, how they're showing up, like all the things. Because it's really easy to judge someone else's parenting when you've never had kids and you like only see them on the weekends.
It's the best.
But anyway, we spent a lot of time just like venting and bitching and talking about all of the things. And I noticed it. And I brought it up to him and I said, I think that we got to stop. Like, this is what we're connecting over. Like, this is like the primary thing we're talking about all the time. And it was always very solution focused, but still it was it. And I remember for about 2 months, I was like, should we be together? Because I don't have anything else to say.
Right.
Because this has been consuming my life. This has been all we're talking about, all we're thinking about. We stopped doing things we loved. Like, we stopped talking about our hobbies and our interests and all those things. And it can really become something that you're just like completely fixated on. And then you're like, oh,
yes.
What is it? Trauma bonding or something like that? Like you're bonding over that, but I think it's really interesting you said that, because we went through this like 2 month period where I was just like, what do we talk about now? And, you know, making that decision to stop talking about it was the best thing we ever did, but we still talk about it, but it doesn't consume your date night, your conversations.
It's really smart you did that, and you're surviving because of it. And a lot of people don't make it out of there, especially when I see the very, you know, difficult divorce where it's very difficult for co-parenting, very traumatic on both sides, those kind of things. And then we've got the new boyfriend, the new girlfriend, they are trauma bonding. And those are the ones that are really difficult for longevity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Well, I always say it's Darren can't afford another divorce. It doesn't matter.
I'm stuck with you. So
whenever we're in an argument, I'm like, well, how long are you going to be mad at me? Like, let's be honest. Like, you can't afford another. You don't want to do that again. It's always our joke. But, you know, let's talk about that for a second, the financial piece. So I think, you know, the big issue for a lot of, I think, child support paying partner, right? The ex is the child support piece. And I saw this meme on your Instagram, and it was talking about like how, you know, the ex thinks that you're using child support for your phone bill and for your Gucci and for all those things, when really like you're just trying to buy groceries, which I think is so true in a lot of situations. I also think on the flip side, there are situations where the child support is not going towards the kids. There is that abuse of the system. Do you see that come up? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
I do to some extent, but I also, at least in our law in Illinois, where, you know, Chicago is located, our law basically states that the kids should live a similar lifestyle to what they've been accustomed to. And people forget, it's really easy for people to forget who are paying the child support, that that might mean payment towards your car, payment towards the lights in the house, payment towards a mortgage, maybe of a house that you don't like or you don't approve of or whatever. And the hardest part in our law is for the payor, the person who's paying the money, there's no accounting. You know, you pay the money and you just hope that it goes to the right places. And you can't say, well, give me the accounting of what you spend it on. No, you're not entitled to that. So for the most part, I think that child support's tricky, I would say. But I don't really see so much of an abuse, because at least where I am, it's really clamped down on the amount of money that is being given over. It's honestly, in my opinion, too low to even raise a child in the middle of rural America.
Okay.
What the child support is currently used to be much more advantageous for the payee receiving the child support where I am. And now I think it's way too low. So it's hard for me to see child support awards that, you know, they're out there getting the plastic surgery. It's just not happening where I am. I'm sure it might happen other places, but now I feel like our laws and our child support amounts are behind the times. And that's normal. Laws always behind the times. We're always catching up, but we're behind the times in what we do for our children these days. I mean, what we do now for kids and what kids expect and what parents expect to give their children. I know I wasn't getting in the 80s. I don't know about you ladies, but you know, I didn't get the newest, hottest sandals or, you know, able to go on whatever trip I wanted.
You got a job.
Yeah, exactly. You want that? You're going to get that lemonade stand out, sister. So that's just, it's just different.
Just having that conversation today about like where my kids go to school, they have this service where they have restaurants delivered lunches every day.
Oh my gosh, give me a break.
Right? They call it fun lunch, right? And I was doing the math and I'm like, God damn it. I'm spending at least for half my week, because I have them for half the week, it's $50 a week that I spend to have these lunches delivered.
And you know, they're probably barely eating any of it, right?
Right. Well, then I decided like maybe I need to cut this. So I'm like, I'm going to stop this. And now they're refusing to eat. They've like boycotted lunch because now I'm not, you know, like it's embarrassing, mom, that you're packing me a sandwich. Like, God forbid, like nobody does that. I need the fun lunch. Well, and then I realized, wait a minute, with the way that things shake down, my ex should be paying for more of that than I am. But again, are you going to go and cause all this money over the fact that like, okay, you should be paying for X amount of the fun lunches. Is fun lunch a necessity? No. How much of child support is going to the fun lunch? And the fact that like you said before, in the 80s, we didn't get any of this stuff.
Fun lunch, it was like slop on a plate. That was our fun lunch. It was like, please, no more.
Fun lunch for me was, I remember I used to turn the pizza upside down and tell everybody that it looked like a Pop-Tart. That was my fun lunch. And now here we are. And I think it's funny, like to your point, Morgan, the child support thing is so wacky in where we are that we can't even make the argument of, you know, what you were saying before of like, oh, what kids are used to. Like, I wish I could say, no, the money has to go to my Botox because the kids are used to looking at my face fully full of Botox. It wouldn't be right for the kids if they saw the wrinkles, but there's not even enough for that because we can't even cover fun lunch.
Hey, I'm a fan of Botox, so I could get on board with that. No, I agree. And I think it depends on the area, right? Because you guys are saying that, and I'm thinking about our child support system, and I'm like, I feel like it's different. Canadians are always maybe a little, it's always a little more generous over here.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I do feel like there's a windfall in a lot of situations here. So it's interesting.
And I feel like that's probably a big thought for step parents, because you're watching the money fly out the window to the ex and you're like, what are you doing with that money?
Mm-hmm.
So I totally see where you're coming from too. And I bet it is different there for sure. I suspect that you're probably in the system that we used to have, which was a straight percentage of the income.
It was a table.
Yeah, it's a table. Okay. We used to be a straight percentage of the income depending on children. And so if you made a lot of money, guess what? You were getting a lot of child support. If you didn't, you were getting little.
Yeah, for sure. And here's the thing though. At the end of the day, it's like you're saying, there's nothing you can do about it. And for me, I remember at the very beginning, you know, I was 26. I had just kind of like got on my feet. I remember going to the grocery store and only spending $50 for me on the week. And then when I would go and realize how much it was to have kids and all the things, and then all the money that was going out, I could just throw up all the time, right? So it really triggered me for a long time, just feeling like it was just not fair. And I know it still kind of triggers my husband, but you can't do anything about it. Like you literally can't do it. It is like your taxes, like this is the law, like all the things. And I think getting to the point where you can kind of let go of that, because, you know, it is, think about it as just like a bill, right? You literally cannot do anything about it. And I think the sooner that you let that go, it actually minimizes conflict in a lot of other areas, because I think when you're dealing with the money piece, everything else is just extra triggering.
Yes, agreed with you. Yep. I think that's what you should do when you're in the step-parent relationship, is take a step back and say, what are the things that I can control? And what are the things that are out of my control? And the things that are out of your control and you really have no ability to change, you have to cut it off as a stressor in your relationship to keep your relationship strong.
Mm-hmm. Because he can't control it either. Like it's just, no one can do anything about it. No one can do anything about it.
No, nothing he can do. You know, for lack of a better term, bitch about it, the more stressed you're going to be, and there's no outcome that's good.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Okay. Well, thank you so much, ladies. I could talk to you forever. We're going to have to do this again. But yeah, tell everyone, where can we find you? What do you got going on? The podcast is unreal. You're killing it. Give us the details.
Well, you can find our podcast anywhere you listen to your podcast. It's called How Not to Suck at Divorce. You can find us over on Instagram, same handle. We have a private community. It's called the How Not to Suck at Divorce community. You can find that on Facebook. I'm pretty sure we can put a link in the notes of this episode so people can join the community. And on our website, which is How Not to Suck at Divorce, you will see a brand new program, which is called the Divorce Crash Course, which is really, really cool because we pull from like the five areas where we see people make the biggest mistakes, and we very succinctly go over how to avoid them. And it's like 10-minute videos. There's five videos in there, and then also a guidebook that you can print out that gives you a checklist and everything. And that's all on the website.
I love it. I love everything you guys are doing. Thank you so much for taking the time. We'll be sending everyone your way. That's it for this one. Thank you so much for tuning in. And if this episode resonated with you, I'd be so grateful if you could share it with someone in your life who you think could benefit from it. And if you haven't already left a rating and a review on iTunes, it really is the best way to support the show. And if you're craving more real talk and coaching and community, be sure to check out my membership, the Kickass Stepmom community. Head to www.kickassstepmom.com to learn more.